Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. Buy FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/hamnation. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 362, August 8th, 2018. Last Man Standing returns.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and we're in our office here in Illinois. And we got a great show tonight. Going to learn a lot of things and going to meet some people. And you're going to hear about the Huntsville Ham Fest. That's very important. So lots going on, but let's see who all's here. First of all, Gordo, how are you doing out in California? Everything okay with the fires and stuff with you and Suze?
Well, the fires are very close, Bob. It's about 100 degrees here and fires on two sides of us, but luckily about 8 miles away. The Hawaiian Beacon has been coming in all week, 2,500 miles, 60 watts, and a couple of beams. We worked Hawaii. And this weekend, Bob, it's Perseids meteor shower. Bob, back to you.
You got it. All right. We'll be back to you in just a couple of minutes. Let's see what's going on down in Mississippi. George, how are you doing? You've been out tracing transmitters, haven't you?
Well, I have, Bob. I've been out to transmitter site yesterday. Actually, I went to two yesterday. I ended up working about 2 days worth yesterday because I got through at one site and another site called me and said, hey, we got problems over here, too. So, anyway, we're going to have a little Tales from the Transmitter tonight, Bob.
Okay. I love those Tales from the Transmitter. Those are usually really good. Don, I bet you like to hear the Tales from the Transmitter. What do you think, huh? It's Don Wilbanks.
I do, because you know what? I see life from the other side of the microphone. I'm typically the loose nut behind the mic that George has to go and fix. Make do with. Most engineers, you know, they have about as much trouble dealing with the talent as they do the equipment. I love the behind the scenes stuff in broadcast, because it's, you know, it's what I've been doing for 40 years. Speaking of the fires, I got a picture that was a private message to me via Twitter from Dr. Scove earlier today, that the fires are fairly close to her parents' home, too. And in fact, she said they had dropped retardant in her parents' backyard. That's how close the fires were. And they looked like they were like on the next ridge over from her parents' house. So hopefully all those people in California so many people have been affected by it. And we have our fingers crossed that they'll get those fires under control again soon. Biggest fire in California history going on out there in the brush fires. Just it's terrible. We'll have a report on that on Amateur Radio Newsline, the headlines, and also we'll have video from Dr. Scove today with the solar update. Bob, back to you. It's a full show.
Okay. Yeah, we've got good stuff tonight, and Amanda is going to be watching the chat room, so we'll be in there a little bit and visit with some of the folks in the chat room. Well, I want to kick off things here tonight. I have a few minutes I want to take. Really incredible. This past week, I got about a half a dozen emails, and most of them were all about the same subject. They're new hams, they have new transceivers, and they're having problems getting them on the air. And several of them had the new 7300. One of the others had a 718, so on and so on. And it's like, it all boils down to the fact that they're having problems with the antenna. And they ask me, How do you do this? Where do you start? What do you do? Well, first of all, look for a good club. There's a lot of great amateur radio clubs around your territory, I guarantee you. And that's the best advice, is to find an active club, especially one that can help you get into the building of antennas for low frequency and so on. And others, of course, are repeater clubs. But to me, you really need, if you have the transceiver now and you have that investment, let's make it work. And my advice to all new hams is, do not try to work every frequency that you now have on your license. Pick one of them. And I like to pick 40 meters. The reason is open just about all the time. 20 dies usually long about the sundown. 75 is crowded and very noisy, and you got to have bigger antennas. So here's my advice. You want to build a 40-meter dipole. No, you don't want all these other things. We want just simple dipoles. To get the right length of them, you dial up 468 divided by the frequency in megacycles. But you don't even have to do that. Just cut a couple of pieces of 33-foot long wire. Go to Lowe's, buy some number 16 copper solid, and get 66 foot of it, and cut those wires. Now, what you're looking at here, I use a piece of plexiglass. I've done it with sometimes formica, but that's not a good thing. Plexiglass works great, or if you have a fiberglass plate, a lot of times I'll have some old printed circuit boards, and you drill four holes. And, they could be like a half inch. And then that little square in the bottom, you mount a coax connector. That's the back of a chassis mount coax connector. And then you route your wires, your antenna wires, through those holes. And that works really good for a center insulator. You screw the coax on the other side. And you don't need anything wild. Just good old RG58U works wonders. And there you have a great 40-meter antenna. It's a half-wave dipole. It also works a little bit on 15. But as I said, don't get all mixed up trying to work everything out there at first. And the reason I say that is you get the feel of amateur radio. You get the feel of talking to people and getting involved, and you meet new friends all over the country and the world. Some of you might recall a few years back we did this, and I took a radio that RNL, Roger, I told Roger, I said, find me a radio in the flea market at Dayton. I never get to go out on the flea market. And he did. He found an ICOM 730, an old ICOM, but it worked good. And he paid $150 for it. We made that very antenna. I didn't even mess with it. It was 33 foot each side. You can give or take whatever you want. You can argue up, it needs to be 32. No, just cut it to 33 foot. See what happens. You know what happened? I had a cherry tree out in the back of the house, and I had two of them, and it didn't get up more than about 15 or 20 feet between the two. And if you'll remember, this was live, and the first station I worked was London, England. It was not set up. I just took what came, and what came across the receiver was London. That's the kind of fun that really makes ham radio, and it can happen for you. Not big deal. What do we got tied up in that antenna? Well, $5 and then the coax. And you're going to have a lot more to do than that, but that'll get you started. And you can play around with adjusting ends of it. And you don't need to cut an antenna. You can wrap it back on itself and wire tie it just the length between the ends of it. But 33 foot is going to get you. It's going to get you on the air. And from there, it really gets more fun with all the other bands. But no, get on one band, stay on it, and I think you'll find you're going to have a whole lot of fun. Send me an email. Let me know what happens when you do that. And if you have one of the new transceivers, this will work just fine. And from there, we can get into the different. Want to do a two or three band and switch them. That's the way to do it. You do a dipole for each band and then have a rotary switch. And I just love dipoles. There's all kinds of antennas, but I got to tell you, nothing works like a tuned dipole. Nothing. I've been in this 63 years. Nobody has ever shown me a better antenna. It's amazing, and you will have that fun also. So give me some emails and let me know how things work for you. You got any questions, as I got this week, send them along. And if I can't answer it, I will send it to Gordo, and Gordo can help you for sure. Gordo, what do you think? Is that a pretty good indication of what's going to happen when they put up 33 foot each side?
Oh, yeah, they will be on the air big time. And I promise next week, as you're headed for Huntsville, we'll tell them how to build a 10-meter dipole without cutting your 33 feet of wire on each side.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to Josh. Josh is our new production manager, our new main producer. And Josh, if you'll go ahead and roll that first video, because we are delighted. Actually, it's a short shot, not a video. Sorry, Josh. That first shot of Last Man Standing. That's right. They're coming back. And we are delighted that John Amadeo sent us these photos of the new Last Man Standing radio setup. And as you can see, they're ready to go on the air. And they're going to be on the air with this setup next Tuesday, August 14th, and listen for either KA6 LMS for Last Man Standing or AA6 Romeo Alpha. That's Rob. Rob is the VE, and he's also one of the main men there at the studio. And between Rob and his team, as well as John Amadeo, Last Man Standing is going to be on the air big time on Tuesdays, 2300 hours Zulu, which is 4 p.m. Southern California time, 7 p.m. those of you on the other coast. So it's going to be a great station. And Josh, let's just jump right into more radio. And when we talk about more radio, we think about all that we can do as ham radio operators in an emergency, or ham radio operators supporting, that's it, Josh, supporting emergency comms. That's what's happening out here in Southern California with all the fires. And it used to be back until about 84 that those that went further than ham got their commercial license. But in 1984, they turned the commercial first and second into the general radio telephone operator license, which required passing 24 questions for element one and 100 questions for element three. Guess what? Element three was taken right out of my GROL plus radar book that's available from the W5YI group, because they needed to come up with a question pool that had already been approved. If you look on the left, that's the extra book. If you look on the right, that's a page out of the commercial element three book. Those questions are identical. In fact, about half of what you'll be studying is identical for the commercial that you studied for extra class. Now, the big deal about the commercial license is you might get a boat ride, because every 5 years, the U.S. Coast Guard wants to see an inspection aboard those vessels that carry passengers for hire, which means that you're going to be busy checking out with pretty much common ham gear, your VHF radio equipment aboard, looking at the EPIRB. Most important, using your equipment to double check that the antenna is okay. Now, if you got a Bird 43 watt meter, that's great, but that's pretty heavy to lug down to a boat. So even a simple meter like this that you've looked at ahead of time will work fine. And there's a lot of MFJ equipment that works great as frequency counters, as well as this that works as a deviation monitor, because the marine VHF band is at 156. And that, of course, originally comes out of the box at 146. And, of course, you want to take along your diagonals and some tape and some tie wraps, because sometimes you're having to get in behind the radios to check out, make sure that the antenna SWR is going to be nice and low. And that's my 50-point checklist that I use. So when we're ready to go ahead and start the checkout of the different vessels, we want to make sure. Josh, if you'll go ahead and go to the next slide, please. And many times you can cure problems just by plugging in the GPS that's now required on these commercial boats to be feeding the radios so that they are always working on digital selective calling, as well as automatic identification service. And many times it's just programming the radios that the commercial boys or girls didn't know how to do. And that's why they bring you down to the boat. Maybe it's $75 an hour. You're looking for stuff like this in your ham career. You know, green coax, nope. That is definitely waterlogged. And you're going to probably not go with that. And you do need to know how to work with those different connectors in case you decide you want to put an extra hour in and solder up your own PL259 or the in connector. And I always like it to look at a PL and make sure I see those see the outside braid soldered up, as well as the center conductor that we see here. That's a good one. And you got to be in good shape, because you're going to be squeezing into little areas like this. Many times you're going down to the engine room and taking a look at the batteries aboard these commercial boats. And this commercial sign-off requires the GROL, General Radio Operator's License. Now, big news among aircraft. It's called by the FAA Next Gen, for next generation. And this is going to be a new piece of equipment that flight service stations are going to be looking for folks to be able to drop in. And that new equipment is called Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast Gear. And Josh just zoom right through these photos. And that gear can be installed by a non-GROL operator. And you need to check out and put in new antenna system. But it's a brand new service that the FAA is mandating for those aircraft that are flying in controlled airspace. And many times you're just doing a small connector like this, plugging it in. At other times, you may be assigned to look at some computerized equipment, and many of these flight stations, service stations, do require that someone be there with a GROL license, elements 1 and 3, that after using all of this equipment, they get it signed off. And let me tell you, this next-gen GPS-type system is going to be able to handle a lot of digital traffic, so that you don't have to be talking, if you're an aircraft owner, consistently on the mic. It's all going to be digital. That's Jason, W6AUX, with the Coast Guard Auxiliary. He works very closely with the Coast Guard, because every 5 years, the Coast Guard is going to be inspecting those stations and making sure that they're working up to snuff. So I encourage all of you, if you've got the extra, get the Gordo GROL book, and you are going to do just fine working on marine VHF equipment aboard those passenger vessels carrying six or more, make that six and more passengers for hire, or 100 tons. They need to be inspected every 5 years, that VHF, just like your two-meter radio, is working as it should be, and you sign it off, and the Coast Guard will look at that. And onward and upward. Usually it's 3 or 4 hours aboard at $80 or $100 an hour. Good change for those of us hams always looking for some new ICOM gear. In fact, speaking of ICOM gear, Josh, let's go to ICOM.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. See how you can make the most out of contest season with these transceivers. The competitive edge you've been looking for, raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this flagship HF 50 MHz transceiver, the IC7851. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. The IC7610 is the SDR every ham wants and just in time for contesting season. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receiver, dual digicell. IC7300 is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation and register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for August, it's going to be the ICOM ID 51A+2 VHF UHF D-Star Portable Radio. Dual band, dual watch, built-in GPS, extended D-Star coverage with terminal mode and access point mode, DV fast data mode, DV and FM repeater search functions, and there's a RSMS1A free Android app available. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, I like giving away ICOM's radios so much that you'll have an additional chance to win one coming up right here soon. We'll be announcing details this Saturday night at 8 at live.amateurlogic.tv. And we're going to be celebrating our 13th anniversary coming up real soon, and we're going to announce the details on a great contest we've got going with ICOM, MFJ, Howl Sound, and Gordon West Radio Schools. All details Saturday night, 8 Central, 0100 UTC, live.amateurlogic.tv. And I'll just give you a hint. I think Bob mentioned the particular radio that we'll be giving away here a little bit earlier tonight. So more details on that forthcoming real soon. And now, well, I mentioned earlier we're going to be going to the transmitter site tonight. So here's a little tales from the transmitter.
I'm here in an FM transmitter building, and that's a 25-kilowatt continental transmitter, and it needs a new tube in it. The tube that's in it now has gone soft. It's no longer producing full power, and it's time to replace it. If we look up here on the transmitter itself, we'll see that the power is down, which is typically what happens when these begin to get weak. We're down to, 77% there. So I've cranked up the filament voltage to try to milk out as much life out of the tube as I could. We're running about 8.4 kilovolts at about 3.2 amperes of plate current. So we're not making full power, and it's time for a change. So I'll take you through the beginning stages of that today, just to see what it looks like inside the transmitter and some of the parts that are in there. Here's the tube we're going to replace. It's a 4CX15000A. This is a rebuilt tube. It's pretty fair size. If I set a pin on top of it, just to give you an idea of scale, maybe that'll help show you how large it is. As I mentioned, this is a rebuilt tube, although it looks almost new there. Looking closer here at the plate where the connection goes, you can see that has been cut and welded back several times. Also around the bottom here of those fins, they cut the tube to remove all the elements out of it, and
each time they redo this tube, that stem gets just a little bit shorter, so eventually they won't be able to rebuild it anymore. All this up here on top, that around the edges you see, that's just a heat fin there that air blows through. And down here on the bottom, if we look up under it, we'll see the two connections for the filaments. There's one right there, and then the other one right around it. On the outside here, the control grid and the screen grid connections. And, of course, it's made out of ceramic. And the top of the tube, the heat fins and all, that is the plate. Now, these are rebuilt, and they're getting kind of old. If you look close, you'll notice a lot of pitting on the handle on this one right here. They replate them each time, but you can see where that one has taken some abuse in the past. Fortunately, though, our plate blocker connects below that. So it still looks clean down here on this area where we'll be connecting to. So hopefully this will be a good tube. I've turned off the main transmitter now, and I've got the auxiliary transmitter on the air. This used to be the main transmitter years ago. You can see the power is down on it some. The engineer before me tapped down the transformers in it, so it won't make full power now. Mainly what we want out of this transmitter is reliability. We need it to be there when we need it without question. So operating it at a little lower power will help ensure that. It would probably make full power if I retapped it. Over here is the antenna switch that selects between the two different transmitters and sends that signal either to the antenna on the tower or to the dummy load. You can see there goes the transmission line to those two transmitters. This is remote control, so it can be switched remotely. Now, if you follow this line down, there's a 25 kilowatt dummy load sitting right there. And beside it, there are some nitrogen bottles. You know, this transmission line is hollow, so we have to keep pressure on it to keep moisture from building up inside of it and arcing over. We keep a low pressure. This is about 2.5 pounds in the line and about 2,100 pounds remaining in that tank there. So a tank lasts a pretty good while as long as we don't have a bad leak in the line. As I mentioned, the transmission line is hollow, so we do keep it pressurized. This is rigid line inside the building. That's what broadcasters call hard line. And you can see that comes right out the side of the building there, and it runs on for about 20 feet, and then it converts over and attaches to a piece of 3-inch heliax line. And that goes on up the tower to our antenna. Now, I recently had a leak here, and I had to have that repaired, and it's in better shape now. I never lost pressure on it, so there was no concern about water entering the line. Now, this is a 1,000-foot tower. At the top up there is our FM antenna. We're sending approximately 25 kW from the building, and some of that's lost in the transmission line. But the gain of the antenna multiplies our power up to where we've got 100 kW vertical and horizontal effective radiated power. And that's all the time we've got to look at this today. So in our next episode, we're going to take a closer look inside the transmitter to see what's in there. And we'll pull that old tube out in preparation for putting in the new one.
And George?
Yes, Gordo?
Gordo here. Will this tube maybe suffice? Actually, it's nothing more than oil and vinegar next time you do a salad. Yeah. But it looks like a tube, huh?
Well, it does. It looks more like something I'd see in an AM transmitter, I think. Maybe. I don't know. I don't think it'll make 25 kW, though, Gordo. That would be my concern. And, you know, you look out there, you got high voltage, a little over 8,000 volts. So you have to be careful out there. There's a 1,000-foot tower you're standing up under, lots of mechanical hardware and stuff. You can get hurt out there. I'll just say we won't go into any details right now, but it's real easy to to make a mistake or to not even make a mistake and still get injured, which is what happened to me. When you got your hand in something that's got 8,000 volts in it and you hear something else in the room fall and make a loud noise, you tend to jerk your arm out real quick. And I left a little skin and hair on one of the sharp edges in that transmitter. So, yeah, you need to be careful in there. We'll have more on that next week. As a matter of fact, I just finished editing that a little earlier. So we'll look inside there and look at the tube socket and talk a little more about it. But right now, I'm going to give away something. You know, wasn't last week because I was not here. I was vacationing in Houston, had a great time out there, visiting with my son and his family. And always a fun time when we go out there. I listened to HF I tried tuning in HF, from Jackson to Houston. And then on my return trip, the bands were just dead last week in the middle of the day. So I didn't work any HF. But hey, at least I tried. I did pick up a lot of AM broadcast stations, so it makes a great AM receiver if you can't hear ham. So we did that. But 2 weeks ago when I was here, I picked up Gordo's General Class Study Guide here, and I looked in and picked out a question that I ask our viewers here like I do every week. And, the question I asked 2 weeks ago, which of the following would increase the bandwidth of a Yagi antenna? Is it larger diameter elements, closer element spacing, loading coils in series with the elements, or tapered diameter elements? Well, a guy we know here, and, it was just a random drawing to pick out a winner because just about everybody got this one right. But the guy who's going to win is our friend Charlie Wooten, NF4A. Charlie's actually been here on Ham Nation before. He's a well-known broadcast engineer down in Panama City and also a real big contester, and he participates in so many big contests all over the world. He's always on the road traveling. I think he was at the big events they had over in Europe just recently that Val talked about. Anyway, Charlie said that it is larger diameter elements. And, that's correct. We were talking about the Unipole antenna for AM broadcast station that we looked at recently and about how those skirt wires on the outside of the antenna made it appear that it was larger diameter. Well, that's correct. Larger diameter elements will increase your bandwidth. So, Charlie, congratulations. You're going to win an MFJ 213 giant LED clock here. That'll look good in the ham shack. Does both 24 and 12 hours. And it's big enough that you don't have to have the glasses on to see it. You can set it across the room and, and still read it. So highly recommended for the ham shack there. Next week, I've got another question here. And I mentioned that transmission line that we looked at there. And by the way, that piece that looked orange up there looked like maybe it had gotten hot and was melting. Well, no, that's orange paint, so it's not really been hot like that. But I ask, or I'm going to ask, why do we use hollow transmission line at these broadcast plants? Not all of them use it. Some of them use foam fill line, which is pretty common with amateur radio stuff. But why do we use that hollow or air dielectric transmission line so much at broadcast stations? If you know the answer to that, well, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win a copy of the great book from Gary Drash, K9DJT, Ham Radio is Alive and Well. You know, Gary was out of ham radio for a number of years. He's wondered if it's still around, and lo and behold, with a little research there, he found out, it's still around, and boy, is there a lot to do now. So Gary talks all about his coming back to ham radio and how much fun he's had. So if you want to win that, then answer that question. Why do we use air dielectric transmission lines so much in broadcasting? HamNationContest@gmail.com. and you could be our lucky winner. And looking over here at the old rundown, I think it's time for me to toss it to Don, and who knows where it will go from there.
It can go nowhere but down, believe me. Hey, you know, Charlie Wooten's going to be at Huntsville, so you could save the postage and just put that thing in your bag and give it to him when you show up. You know that, right?
Yeah.
And as far as, let me see your bandage again on your arm. That's horrible. Yeah. You know what you need? You know, if you had a radio angel, if you had yourself a little guardian radio angel, you might not have these problems, George. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm not saying. I'm just saying. That's what you need. You need a little radio guardian angel. See, there you go. And yeah, there you
go. I happen to have these already from when we did the Chip and Ham show a while back. You know, I had the cuffs there.
Oh, God. That's just wrong. See, now I would expect something like that to come out of my mouth, not yours. Wow. Okay. That's good stuff. All right. Hey, listen, let's talk about accounting. I know most accounting software is built for accountants, but FreshBooks is changing all that. FreshBooks is an owner-first accounting platform that puts you cool dude, you, the small business owner or dudette, back in control of your business. FreshBooks Approachable Accounting is a full industry standard double entry accounting that enables painless automatic bookkeeping and reporting. Core reports like the general ledger, trial balance, and chart of accounts will generate automatically and help you facilitate a better relationship between business owners and their financial advisors and or accountants. And if you have great ambitions and need some robust accounting, FreshBooks can grow with you. But if you're still conquering the day-to-day tasks of creating invoices and collecting payments, FreshBooks is the magic wand you've been searching your entire life for. FreshBooks will help you quickly access accounting reports right there in the FreshBooks dashboard and send professional-looking invoices in literally seconds. And with FreshBooks, there's no need to chase clients for payment. Accept online payments directly from your invoice and get paid an average of 2 times faster. You can see sent, viewed, paid, and overdue invoices, create proposals with rich text content and images, and request your client's e-signature as they accept those proposals. Send invoices, estimates, and proposals in multiple languages. FreshBooks automatically connects you to your bank account and updates expenses daily. You can import expenses in bulk or take a picture of a receipt, upload it, and FreshBooks will do the rest. Keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks mobile app for Android and iOS. Join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time, and capture expenses, and get back to doing what you love.
Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation.
Enter HamNation at the How Did You Hear About Us prompt. That's FreshBooks.com/HamNation. And we do thank FreshBooks for their support of Ham Nation. We have had a big show tonight and got a big Ham Fest coming up, not this weekend, but the weekend after. And that is Huntsville Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. And we have the chairman of the Huntsville Ham Fest, Mark Brown, in for BCD on with us tonight. Mark, are you there and how are you doing?
Good evening, Don. I'm doing great. It's getting busy. We're getting ready to put on a big show down here.
I'll bet it is. I don't know exactly when the Huntsville Ham Fest started, but I know that Newsline has been involved with it since 1993. That was the first year that we presented our Young Ham of the Year award there. And save for the 1 year, I think it was in 2014 when we didn't award one at all, that's been the home of the Young Ham of the Year award, and we're just so happy to be there. So we've been there for 25 years, and you're new in the reins, following in the footsteps of the late Charlie Emerson. So what do we have planned for the partygoers there that are coming to the Huntsville Ham Fest? What's on the docket that's new that we haven't seen before?
Well, let's talk about what's the same before we describe what's new. 80,000 square feet in the Von Braun Center. It's all air conditioned. We've got about 54 vendors this year. We're so full, we had to displace some of the club tables outside of the commercial area. So good crop of vendors, all the major radio manufacturers. We've got three or four national distributors, and just basically it's going to be a full house. scattered around that in a big L shape in the big room is about 384 flea market tables. And wow. You've been in the area, Don. You remember that we fill up that room, and then the forum rooms and the test exam area is out in what the Von Braun Center calls a pre-function hallway. And of course, we get a lot of folks testing on Saturday and Sunday. A lot of stuff like that. We've got a great forum lineup, just like in years past. You know, Huntsville's it's known as the Rocket City. And I was counting on the forum schedule today, no less than seven guys, presenters with PhDs. These guys are experts in their fields, and it should be a great show. You ask about what's new. The youth forum here has been extremely popular. Dr. Monty Bateman has, year after year, put on a tremendous youth lounge. The folks that visit from Dayton and Orlando say, hey, we got to do that. We got to do, and they picked it up from us. But Monty Bateman is, he's going to expand it this year. It's going to be about 50% larger. Last year, he implemented a GOTA station and a couple of other additional things, robotics. But he hasn't really told us what he's doing new this year, but we can bet that it's going to be a popular activity, for hams young and old. One of those things, Quicksilver, John B. at Quicksilver is donating some solder stations. So he'll be having a bit of a solder school, and you don't have to be a kid to sit down and get some mentoring on how to melt solder and not burn yourself. So that's one of the new things. The Alabama Contest Group. The last year they did a Dutch treat luncheon over at the Embassy Suites on Saturday afternoon. Well, that proved to be very popular. We're formally promoting that this year, so get some more activity there. I heard you mentioned or somebody mentioned before Charlie Wooten. Yeah, Charlie's going to be there, and he was at WRTC. I have to congratulate him for winning that 24-hour clock. And, Charlie will be there doing a forum on his WRTC event. let's see what else is new. The DX banquet, it outgrew its facility last year. And so it's moving back to a hotel closer. Actually, it's, just behind, the South Hall of the Von Braun Center. Jim Fenstermacher, he was activating, Kosovo, when it became a new country here a few months back. He's the guest speaker at the banquet this year. So lots of great new stuff. Of course, we have the hospitality suite over at the Embassy Suites on Friday and Saturday night. And hope to join you over there. That's a nice little decompressing place that if you're staying at the – I know you're staying at the Embassy, Dawn. I made your hotel reservation. But that'll be a great time Friday and Saturday night. Back to you, Dawn.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to – I like the hospitality suite. I like that a lot. I like to get in there. And will you be selling tickets, the prize tickets as well in the hospitality suite as in years past?
We may do that on Saturday night, but we're holding the tickets until Friday until Friday morning, until we get a handle on things. We're trying to get some control over the buttons and get a more accurate count. It's one of those things, you know, things start flying off in three different directions. It's hard to count things at the end. So we're trying to get a better handle on things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love the Huntsville Ham Fest. Like I said, I've been going since 99, when I first got involved with amateur radio newsline, and, or 95, I'm sorry, 95 when I got licensed. So I've been going to Huntsville for a long, long, long time and just absolutely love it.
Don, you have way more experience than me. I've got back in the hobby about 10 years ago, and I guess I was punished for my enthusiasm. I got elected to be a local club president and did that for a while, ran the DX club for a while. But I was tapped when we unexpectedly lost Charlie Emerson, N4OKL. The Hamfest committee asked me to fill the spot. I will do his job, but I'll never fill his shoes.
Yeah,
he was
exactly
a great guy.
Yeah. Filling the position and filling the shoes are two different things, as I'm kind of seeing with Bill Pasternak and Newsline. I'm not the head of Newsline. I'm just the most visible part of the staff, I guess. So it kind of falls to me. But one of the true joys in my whole ham radio, I have two favorite things about ham radio that I love. First off is, well, I'm not sure if it's first off. They're kind of a, you know, 50-50 thing is being a VE and making new hams and getting to present the Young Ham of the Year Award. It's just, it's the highlight of my year. The Huntsville Hamfest weekend is the highlight of my ham radio year. As much as I love Dayton, Huntsville is cool. Huntsville, I would say, is on par with Dayton on a much smaller scale. And what I like about Huntsville is, as you said, everything is indoors under the same roof, being cooled by the same air conditioner. And if you stay in the embassy, you don't even have to go outside because you park at the embassy, you stay in the hotel, you cross a sky bridge, an air-conditioned sky bridge, and go right into the Von Braun Center. And you don't even have to go out into the North Alabama August heat, which is just absolutely brilliant. But it's a great ham fest, and it's an amazing venue, and it's one that I look forward to it every year. Talking about the forums, there's one forum I'm really looking forward to, and it is also on WRTC, and that is from Bryant Rascal, who is our incoming Young Ham of the Year. Yeah, he's going to present a forum on WRTC from his point of view, and he was the youngest operator there and the only youth operator from North America. I believe his teammate, I believe, was from South America, Chile, I want to say. I'm not sure. I could be wrong on that. But so I'm looking forward to that. And I think Bob Heil is going to be giving a forum as well. Anything Charlie Wooten does is going to be wrapped up in fun. So, yeah, it's a great ham fest. And if you've never been to the Huntsville Ham Fest, I highly recommend you go because it is one of the great ham fests in the country.
Yeah, Don, you mentioned too the other ham fest, Orlando and Dayton. They're going to share, or they're not going to share. They'll have adjacent booths here in Huntsville, and I had the privilege of visiting with the Dayton guys, the Dayton committee, and the Orlando committee at visits to their respective hamcation and hamvention. We get along really well. We don't really see ourselves as competition. These regional things, of course, Dayton draws folks from around the world, but Orlando's got their local folks, a good turnout down there, and we get a good turnout here, but we learn from each other and we adopt best practices because these events are for the visitors. They're for the vendors. We want to make it, good for everybody because, it helps everyone when these kind of shows, folks leave with a positive image of ham radio and the events. So, Don, we work with those guys, and I'm looking forward to seeing them again. The Dayton guys, Jack Gerbs, the new chairman up there, his daughter's getting married, so he won't be here in Huntsville. But the guys from Orlando are coming up, and we're looking forward to the contingent that comes down from Dayton. And you can bet we'll be together in the embassy on Friday and Saturday night.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Mark Brown, Infor BCD, thank you so much for being a guest on Ham Nation tonight. And we're looking forward to seeing you in a little bit more than a week and presenting the Young Ham of the Year Award there at 2:00 local time there in Huntsville on Saturday the 18th. And it's just going to be a great time. And for anybody watching and wants to find out more about the Huntsville Ham Fest, it's the easiest Ham Fest website ever. Hamfest.org. I don't know how long you guys have had that website, probably a long time, but whoever came up with that was brilliant, just a genius. So hamfest.org is pretty much everything you need to know about what goes on at the Huntsville Ham Fest and lodging and everything else around it. And so, Mark, we'll see you here in a little bit over a week.
We nailed that one on the website name. And mentioned to Gordo, too. I hear him in the background. I owe him an answer to his email. So that's coming in a couple of days, Gordo. I haven't forgotten you, but it's been a busy time, and I got a lot of irons in the fire.
Well, Mark, have a great show. Wish I could be there. See you next year. But next week, we'll feature Huntsville right here on Ham Nation a week from tonight, Mark.
Back yes,
back,
we
Gordo.
Will.
Thanks.
Mark, thanks a lot. And remember, now, when you email Gordon back, remember to type real slow because he can't read real fast. Mark Brown, Infor BCD, thanks for being with us tonight. And we'll see you in Huntsville here in a little bit more than a week. Thanks a lot,
okay,
Mark.
Thanks, Don.
Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we'll see you. Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week and a solar update as well from WX6SWW in the Amateur Radio Newsline headlines.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2127, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 8th, 2018. We begin this week with a report from California, where officials were tallying up the damage from one of California's most devastating wildfires.
By August 1st, the Carr Fire consumed Shasta County, taking with it more than 1,000 homes and at least 8 lives at last count. As shelters opened and the Red Cross sought out communications help, Hams with the Shasta Tehama Amateur Radio Emergency Services, assisted by Hams from Sacramento Aries, stepped in. One of them was Gary Sanda, KI6OMU. He deployed to help what was being called the Carr Fire, the largest of the 17 blazes to have hit the state.
As the fire grew from one shelter to two shelters to, I don't know, maybe five now, six. I mean, one of the places people were sheltering was at a casino. It's got to be 40 miles away.
The Hams were busy providing communications between shelter managers and the Red Cross as needed, since cell phone service remained largely intact.
We're using Winlink packet.
As Newsline went to production, the fire had swept over more than 112,000 acres, and Hams were continuing to work their shifts, sometimes for days. Gary said that any Hams wanting to provide assistance can get details by visiting the state's Communications Reserve Unit website at acscalifornia.org.
Newsline's Paul Brown, WD9GCO, reporting. In other areas of ham radio disaster response, the VOIP Hurricane Net has a new assistant director of operations.
Debbie Gray, WX9VOR, has been a part of the operation since 2016 when she joined the VOIP Hurricane Net as a net control operator. Not long after coming on board, her skills were put to the test during the historic Atlantic hurricane season in 2017 when she worked numerous extended net control shifts and also managed to recruit additional net controls, newcomers, and veterans during Hurricane Irma's and Marina. Debbie fills the vacancy left after Jim Sellers in zero. UAM became a silent key in May. Debbie's background makes her ideally suited for the job. She has had more than two decades' experience as an IT consultant, educator, and mission critical support specialist, work that got her involved in disaster planning. She is also emergency coordinator for the Aries Group of Kane County, Illinois, and a volunteer sergeant for the Naplesville, Illinois EMA Communication and Weather Units. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bobby Best, WX4. ALA.
Young hams from the Dave Coulter Youth DX Adventure have some numbers to share from their log.
If you were among the lucky ones to work PJ2Y, the Dave Coulter Youth DX Adventure in Curacao, you're one of 6,261 contacts in the team's log, according to the team's website. As you can imagine, it was a busy time for the four youngsters and four adults with them. They often didn't get on the air until 10 in the morning and usually operated until about midnight. Team leader Jim Storms, AB8YK, reports that one of their major challenges was a power loss that cost them about 8 hours on the air, but the rest of the time they were busy operating on SSB and CW. They also made an effort to get their FT8 station on the air as much as possible. Congratulations to Violetta Latham, KM4ATT of Greencastle, Pennsylvania, 13-year-old Durov Reba, KC9ZJX of Normal, Illinois, 14-year-old David Samu, VE7DZO of Prince George, British Columbia, and 15-year-old Mason Matrazzo, KM4SII of Clemens, North Carolina. The D-Expedition went off the air on July 23rd, and if you're waiting for your QSL card, be patient. One is expected to be designed and sent soon. Meanwhile, the team's log is now available on Logbook of the World and Club Log. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB.
A reminder, we'll honor youth in amateur radio on Saturday, August 18th at the Huntsville, Alabama Hamfest with our Young Ham of the Year Award. If you can't be there in person, you can catch the live stream at W5KUB.com. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Bobby Best, WX4ALA, Stephen Kinford, NAWB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We have a coronal hole that is rotating into the Earth's strike zone and could bring us some aurora. And one of the two bright regions is now rotating out of Earth view. Will it cause radio propagation to tank? Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week is remaining mostly unsettled. We have a coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth's strike zone here in the next few days. Now, this one will be sending us some fast wind. Now, I doubt it's going to be strong enough to bump us up to storm levels, but we could easily reach active conditions. So you aurora photographers, especially at high latitudes, stay on your toes. The last time this region rotated into the Earth's strike zone almost a month ago, we did get some aurora. So don't give up hope just because we're at solar minimum. Now, the other story is that one of two bright regions is actually leaving the Earth-facing disk. It's rotating off of the sun's west limb. And that does mean that radio propagation is going to tank just a little bit. But we still have one bright region left on the Earth-facing sun. So we're going to be hovering around the top end of poor, likely for radio propagation over the next week. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see solar minimum conditions continue. We have no solar flare activity with a spotless sun, but we do have two unnumbered bright regions on the Earth-facing disk right now. Back around August 2nd is when we started seeing the second of the two rotate into the Earth field of view, and the solar flux and X-ray flux tapered up just a little bit. We've been hovering around the low end of marginal for radio propagation conditions over the past week. But now, as one of those two regions is rotating off of the sun's west limb and out of Earth view, we're going to see that solar flux and X-ray flux taper down again just a little bit. We're beginning to drop into the high end of poor for radio propagation conditions, but we're not going to fall completely off the map because we still have one of the larger regions still in Earth view easily over the next week. So it's going to be a little bit longer before things begin to tank. Switching to your solar storm conditions, as expected, over the past week, we've been kind of hovering around unsettled conditions. This was due to a small coronal hole that had rotated into the Earth strike zone, but it really wasn't all that accessible, so it only sent us a little bit of pockets of fast wind. Not much of an aurora producer, but it did help GPS, especially at low latitudes, and some radio propagation get a little bit of a boost with these unsettled conditions. But all this should change because we have another coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone, and it could easily bump us up to active conditions in about 3 or 4 days. And this one might actually be an aurora producer. So you photographers, stay on your toes. So what else does the sun have in store for us this week? Well, this is Stereo A. It's our backside monitor. You can see here's Earth, here's the sun, and here's Stereo A staring at the sun from behind. And what you can see on the backside is that there is a bit of activity. There's a bright region that's rotated to the west limb of Stereo's view. That's the region that has rotated into Earth view and is keeping that solar flux up and boosting radio propagation, albeit at the top end of poor conditions. But that we'll enjoy here over the next week. The problem is that there's no other real bright regions in Stereo's view. So that means in about 10 days, radio propagation is likely going to tank, and it may stay that way for quite some time. Now, the good news is for you aurora photographers, you get this region that's rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next couple days that could give us a chance for aurora, especially at high latitudes. And then Stereo showing us we've got one finger of a coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth view here in the next day or so, and that could give us some aurora possibilities, and even a larger chance in about 2 weeks when a larger coronal hole is going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone. So it looks like for aurora possibilities over the next couple weeks, we've got some good chances. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that fast wind from that very small coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in about 3 or 4 days. Now, at high latitudes, we're only expecting unsettled to maybe active conditions with about a 35% chance of a minor storm. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting unsettled conditions with about a 5 to 10% chance of a minor storm. And these conditions will last over a couple days before things begin to calm down. So your aurora photographers, especially at high latitudes, stay on your toes. But even if you don't get aurora this particular time, we actually have 3 chances over the next couple weeks to see some shots. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, I know I sound like a broken record, but everything is in the green when it comes to solar flares because we have a spotless sun. We're still dealing with solar minimum conditions. The nice thing is that we're hovering at marginal levels for radio propagation. It's the low end of marginal, but we're staying there for the next couple days before one of those two bright regions rotates completely off the Earth-facing disk. And then we're going to go down just a little bit in solar flux and end up at the high end of poor propagation conditions easily over the next week. Now, I'm also going to add one more piece of information that's new that I've been requested, and that's regarding the aircrew and frequent flyers. When we have solar minimum conditions, this does mean that the cosmic ray flux actually penetrates a little bit higher and more intensely than normal. So as far as you frequent flyers and aircrew are concerned, who fly more than about 800 hours annually and who fly often at 35,000 feet or above, you are now in the marginal levels for radiation dose. And that's just because of the cosmic ray flux that penetrates into our upper atmosphere. So please take the dose rates from the NERAS model into consideration in your flight plans. So despite being at solar minimum, the space weather this week is remaining a bit active. We have a small coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth's strike zone, and that could bump us to unsettled conditions, possibly even active conditions, over the next few days. So aurora photographers, especially at high latitudes, you could be getting some decent shots, so stay on your toes. Now, amateur radio operators and emergency responders, well, things aren't looking quite so great. We have one out of two bright regions on the Earth-facing sun right now that is rotating off of the sun's west limb, which means solar flux is beginning to kind of wane a bit, and radio propagation is kind of diving into the top part of low propagation. And it's going to stay that way easily over the next week before the second of those two bright regions rotates off of the Earth-facing disk. And then radio propagation is really going to tank. And unfortunately, it's going to stay that way for easily the next week after that. Now, GPS operators, you guys are actually in a much better state because these unsettled conditions actually stabilize the upper atmosphere for you. So as long as you stay away from the dawn dust terminators and away from aurora, your GPS reception should look pretty good. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
There she is, Whiskey X-Ray 6, Sierra Whiskey's Whiskey. That's Weather 6, Space Weather Woman. Make sure you follow her on Twitter at Tamitha Scove, and she'll give you up to the minute, sometimes up to the second, reports about what's going on. I don't think the woman sleeps, seriously. She's just amazing. We're going to talk to Amanda in the chat room, but first we want to talk to you about Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, because this particular episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. We'll talk about buying a home for a minute. Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home, and it's causing a lot of anxiety with some people. Well, the friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. And here's how it works. Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval. That gives you the strength of a cash buyer. So what that means is once you're verified, you qualify for their all new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First thing they'll do is lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Here's the best part. If the rates go up, your rates stay the same. If the rates go down, your rates go down too. Either way, you're a winner. It's the kind of thinking you would expect from America's largest mortgage lender. So to get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. That is rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. And we thank them for their support of what we do here at Ham Nation. We also thank Amanda for her support of the chat room. Hello, Amanda. How are you doing, Dollface?
I'm doing excellently. Thank you for asking. Let's see. We've got quite a few things here. I have a couple of Ham Fest to announce, so let's go over those first. We have Tark Fest, which is in Tampa, Florida, August 18th, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Search for them on Google. You'll find out where they are. Also, we have the Kentucky Ham Fest in Lexington, Kentucky, August 11th. Doors open at 8 a.m. Again, Google it. All right, this one is for George. George, somebody wanted you to know that there will be a geosynchronous ham satellite with coverage from Thailand to South America by the end of the year. A first for amateur radio. What do you think?
I think that's real cool. We'll have to, well, I guess we'll have to follow their lead on this one.
It's going to be a good one, Amanda. It's going to be not available to us, but it will be available to South America, just the tip of it to the east, and all of Europe. Wow. And this is the kind of excitement that AMSAT has been following closely for our own AMSAT North America. Soon, maybe next year, geosynchronous space comm. So back to you, Amanda. Thanks, George.
Thank you, Gordo. And, you know, that was for you, Gordo. And I sent it to the wrong person. That's what you get for taking a week off. All right. George, this one is actually for you. Walt W3DDT wants to know, what is the difference between new versus rebuilt tubes? Probably the cost difference.
The cost difference. You know, I haven't bought a new tube in probably 30 years, so I don't know. Actually, back years ago, I discovered that the rebuilt seemed back then to last a little bit longer than the new ones did. And they were about half the price. And I suspect they are, a new tube is a little more than twice the cost of a rebuilt. And what they rebuild about it is they take all the elements out. You know, they cut that stem off the bottom of the tube there, and they pull the elements out. And they replace all the metal, the grids inside of there and the filaments with new materials. And then they put it back up in the heat sink assembly there and braze everything back together. And, you know, theoretically, it should work like a new tube, and pretty much it does.
Well, there you have it. Thanks, George, for that explanation. One other thing I have to say is that Gordo brought up the last man standing operations and how they're coming back on the air. So starting August 14th, you're going to be able to work them on 20 or 40 meters. I have some inside information that 20 meters has been kind of noisy. They have some kind of something there is causing noise on 20 meters. So you might have to search for them on 40, but that's always going to be at 4 p.m. Pacific time. So start looking for them there. Also follow them on Facebook at KA6LMS, and you'll find up-to-date information. And if you don't have HF capabilities, they're also going to be operating on D-Star. So be sure to check them out, work them. You'll get a really cool QSL card. So that's going to be a lot of fun. All right, this question was for Bob, and I'm going to send it to Gordo. And this comes from Tom in 4HAI. He says, I just built a fan dipole for 80, 40, and 20 meters. It tunes up nicely in all bands. This was a lot easier than putting up three separate dipoles. Is there any disadvantages with a fan dipole?
No, I think that's great. But before, George, I absolutely agree. Reconstituted oil and vinegar makes a big difference on tubes. No, fan dipoles are excellent in that the energy from the transmitter goes up the coax and will seek out the dipole element that is most resonant. And on 40 meters, as Bob pointed out, you also get capabilities a little bit on 15 meters. And next week, for all that we're going to do with Huntsville, we're going to build a 10-meter dipole for those technician class operators that may not realize that their ICOM radios go from 28.3 to 28.5 for voice. Amanda, back to you.
That's great, Gordo. I know you're going to have a lot of fun doing that, and I think all of your students are going to have a blast getting on 10 meters, as long as it's open. Let's hope it's open. According to Tamitha, maybe not. But one more thing, Gordo. K4IVE Kevin, he says, let Gordo know before he runs away that I used to make a special trip out to the Mojave Desert when I was a kid to see the Perseid meteor shower. The Perseids are very, they're very dear to me too, because that's the first time Jeff and I went out on like kind of a date. And we went up to a drive outside of town so that we could see the Perseids, and Jeff had no interest, absolutely none whatsoever.
Shocker.
But it was it was really a fun time for me. I always love going out and watching the Perseids. Over to you, Gordo.
This weekend, Friday, Saturday, but Sunday is supposed to be the big one. But unfortunately, you really don't see them well until after midnight. So all you night owls, stay awake midnight on. Just before dawn, that's when Perseids will peak on Monday morning.
I look forward to it. I'm a night owl. I'll do it. All right. Let's go over some nets tonight. We have the D-Star net on 14 Charlie. We have Echo Link on Dewdrop Inn. We have TAC 311 for the DMR net. And let's not forget the 20-meter net on 14268 and also the 40-meter net on, they're probably around 7192. I did not see it posted, but look around there, listen around there, and you'll probably be able to join in. That's all I have. Who's wrapping it up tonight?
I'm not sure, but I just got an email that is of interest to everyone. I just got an email from John Amadeo, who, of course, is the producer of Last Man Standing. And as you all recall, when Last Man Standing was on ABC, they had all of our QSL cards up on the wall on the station on the set. Well, they're doing that again. And he just sent me a picture of QSL cards. I don't have time to show it tonight. But there is a card for Dr. Tabitha Scove. Her WX6 SWW card is going to be on the wall. In fact, it's already there. So there's something for you to be do a little eye spy with my little eye when you watch Last Man Standing when it comes back. Dr. T is on the QSL wall. So very cool. Very cool about that.
That is cool.
Yeah, and another note on that, Don, my friend Tommy N5ZNO was recently out there and visited with John at the studios there and did a good interview and got a lot of background information on the show and the changes and, you know, rebuilding the set, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And we'll have that Saturday night on Amateur Logic.
Looking forward to that. Who's wrapping this up? George, is it you or is it me or do we have to wrestle for it again?
Well,
no, I think
camera.
It's going to be you, but you know, we hams are so appreciative of all the great work that John Amadeo does in putting ham radio out there.
Yeah.
I saw John in New York City. He was working as hard there as he is out here at Studio City. So, John, thank you. We're going to be watching. We can't wait. Don, back to you.
All right. So, George, are we wrestling for it or what? What are we doing?
No, my camera is flashing on and off, so you, rather than me flash the audience, why don't you do it?
Oh, well.
And now, George, back to you.
Since you put it nicely. I mean, you know.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, I've been a disc jockey for many years. I do requests. But probably not here. It probably should say a family show. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. We've had a big show tonight. We've talked about Last Man Standing. We've talked about doing a 40-meter dipole out of just some cheap and easy wire from the Home Depot. And we've talked about the Huntsville Ham Fest. We've talked about Tales from the Transmitter. We've talked about so much stuff and the sun. And I think I'm ready for a nap, actually. So why don't we go ahead and wrap this thing up? And so for all the usual suspects here on Ham Nation, we'll say thank you so much for watching and joining us in the chat room. That's where a lot of fun happens. So if you haven't joined us in the Ham Nation chat room, you definitely should give that a shot. That's for sure. So we'll put a bow on it, and we'll see you again here next Wednesday night. And hopefully we'll see a lot of you in the Huntsville Ham Fest coming up the weekend of the 18th for the Young Ham of the Year presentation. So for all of us here at Ham Nation, good night, everybody. 7-3. We appreciate you.